Coming up on today's podcast, MLB Pipeline senior sports writer Jim Callis breaks down the upcoming Major League Baseball draft with insights on top prospects and thoughts on Major League organizations in the RCN viewing area and tips for fantasy baseball fans. At 18 minutes in, CBS Radio's John Johnson talks Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, and thoughts on the NBA draft, plus a look at potential moves for the 76ers. Then at 46 minutes, we'll catch up with former pro baseball pitcher Dan Wakely and his son Chad and talk about an all-star event to benefit the American Cancer Society. All coming up right now. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. We have a great show lined up with some fascinating guests covering a lot of different topics this evening. I'll be joined by Keith Groller in just a little bit. But right now, let's get to our leadoff guest. To start the program, we bring in Jim Callis, the senior writer from MLBpipeline.com and MLB.com, who does a great job previewing the MLB draft that'll be coming up in just a couple days. Jim, welcome once again to RCN Sports Talk.
Oh, glad to be here. How are you doing?
Oh, very good. So glad to have you on. We appreciated you being on last year, doing a great job breaking down the prospects and all the different players at the high school and college level. And we encourage people, if they haven't done so already, to check out all the videos and scouting reports and all the stuff that you have online at MLB Pipeline and MLB.com. We appreciate your time once again today. First of all, I know people like to put a label on the draft and wanted to pick your brain to start off. What kind of draft is it, if you could put a label? Is it more college players are readily available? Is it more high school players? And people also kind of like to know, is it a positional draft or are there more pitching prospects available? So if possible, could you put kind of a label or a title on the 2017 Major League Baseball draft?
Yeah, it's funny because the way this has worked out, I don't think there's a particular strength in this draft. Mm-hmm. Coming into the year, I would have thought college pitchers would maybe be the strength, that you maybe six or seven, the first 12 or 13 picks might have been college pitchers, and that's not going to be the case. I don't think any area really distinguishes itself. Pro teams never seem to love the college hitting crop. Because they do such a good job of signing the most athletic high school players, and they don't get to college in the first place. So probably the deepest position is the position that would excite teams the least, which would be first base. I think we could see four first basemen possibly go in the top 20 picks or so. And it does seem that this year, I mean, there are a number of outstanding two-way players. I mean, the vast majority of them, yeah, it's pretty clear which way they'll get drafted. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we do have Brendan McKay from Louisville, who I think could be a top five pick either way as a hitter or a pitcher. And there just hasn't been a guy like that since Dave Winfield back in 1973.
Yeah. I've been reading your stories for the last couple of weeks. One of the names that seems to come up quite a bit is Hunter Green, with some pretty big name comparison to people that have had a lot of success in the major leagues. Could you talk a little bit about him? What's his makeup, and how do major league teams view Hunter Green?
Yeah, I think Hunter's probably, it's safe to call him the most famous player in this draft. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated about a month ago. He's got an exceptionally quick arm. Didn't throw a pitch under 95 this spring. Granted, only pitched 28 in the third innings because they shut him down early. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, they handled him very carefully his whole high school career, no injury or anything. But he's hit 102 miles an hour. He would probably be a mid-first-round pick. He's one of those two guys I was talking about. I think he'd be a mid-first-round pick as a power-hitting infielder. For shortstop would probably move to third base down the road. But I think, you know, the top of the draft is still unsettled as to who takes who, which isn't, you know, atypical, you know, 3-4 days out from the draft. But I do think maybe the most certain thing at the top of the draft is I think Hunter Green winds up going number two to the Reds. Mm-hmm. As a pitcher. I think that's the Reds' top guy, and I don't think the Twins are going to take him at number one.
As you know, it's kind of harder to kind of put mock drafts together and analyze players. You see a lot more shifting going on in baseball heading in the weeks up to the draft, as opposed to the NBA that have had kind of the top three names there for a couple months now. And even the NFL draft, usually there's not a whole lot of movement unless there's extenuating circumstances, which unfortunately we see from time to time. But who are some of the other names that have predominantly been staying towards the top and figure to be in the top 10 drafted in a couple days when the June 12th date starts for the draft?
And you're right. I mean, I think the other factor, too, is that, you know, in the NBA and NFL, those seasons are done, whereas a lot of college players are still, like, in the NCAA Division I clubs. You know, there's 16 teams still alive in the playoffs, and some of the high school seasons run pretty late, too. You know, this year, I think there's a clear top five players. They kind of settled themselves out, you know, maybe 4 to 6 weeks ago. Very good chance they are the top five picks, which isn't always the case because signability plays a role as well as ability. But your top five prospects, are, you know, we mentioned Hunter Green. I mentioned Brennan McKay, who I like a little bit more as a hitter. There's Kyle Wright from Vanderbilt, right-handed pitcher. I think Kyle Wright's probably the front runner right now to go number one overall to the Twins. I think he's probably got the highest combination of ceiling and floor of these guys. I think Brennan McKay's got the highest floor, and Hunter Green's got the highest ceiling. The guy I would take number one, if I were picking, and it's easy for me to say because I don't have to spend money on these guys or risk my job necessarily, but I like North Carolina left-hander Mackenzie Gore. He's 92-96, plus curveball. He can flash a plus slider and changeup. Very good control. Unusual late kick, but yet he repeats his delivery very well, throws hitters off. I like him a lot. And then the fifth guy would be Royce Lewis, who's a shortstop. Might want to be in a center field in the long run. High school kid from California. Who's got the best combination in this draft's position players of hitability and athleticism. So those, I think, are your clear top five.
By the same token, it's harder to pick out sleeper picks, but I know every year you come up with some pretty big names or some interesting names that could be into the mix, and there's some great stories out there, too. Could you pick out maybe a sleeper or someone to keep an eye on that's not really on the radar but could make a name for himself down the line?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've got the first round lined up pretty well, but a guy who I think is going to go at the end of the first round and will probably deserves to go in the middle of the first round is Sam Carlson. He's a high school pitcher from Minnesota. He's the best prospect in the state since Joe Mauer back in 2001. Just a real athletic 6'4" kid. His stuff really picked up this year. He had kind of solid stuff in the past and really good pitchability, and now he's got plus stuff. I mean, the fastball's gotten better. The slider's gotten better. He's got one of the best changeups. He's got some of the best command. Pretty good right fielder, too. So he's a guy, I don't know if he's really a sleeper, per se, but he's going to go lower than he should in the first round of the draft. There's another high school righties sometimes scare teams off just because of the injury risk associated with them. I really like a kid in Tennessee named Steven Jennings, right-handed pitcher. He's interesting. He's a star quarterback, too, and he tore the ACL in his knee in September. And it is football season, but he got back on the mound this spring, and he's got a very good fastball, very projectable frame, good slider. Really impressed guys this spring. You know, probably a second-round pick, but he might turn out to be a really good one in the long run.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about some of the teams in the RCN viewing area and where they might go. And we'll start with the Phillies. They've had a massive overhaul, as you know, in their minor league system. They've drafted very high the last few years and made some big trades, which have helped the rebuild process. But Matt Klentak, the general manager, has been preaching about staying the course and not bringing people up before they're ready. Do you think that might change the Phillies' look in the draft, and maybe they'll try to get some college players or people that will be closer to making a major league impact, or do you think they'll continue to stay the course and kind of go with the best available players?
I do think they'll go with the best available guy. I mean, that's what you have to do at the top of the draft. But that said, I think the best available guys are going to be college guys. It seems like the way I'm kind of plotting this out, you know, the Phillies picking at 8, I think the three guys who keep coming up the most for me, you know, unless somebody unexpected falls, are Pavin Smith, a first baseman from Virginia. Some guys think he's the best pure hitter in this year's draft, pretty good power, too. Alex Fajedo, a right-handed pitcher from Florida, has got one of the best sliders in this year's draft. Velocity has been down this spring, which is why he'd be available at 8 when he was projected maybe to go all the way up at the top coming into the year, or at least being a candidate for that. And then Griffin Canning, a right-handed pitcher from UCLA, you know, kind of solid stuff and can really pitch. Those are the three names I'm hearing a lot with Philadelphia at number 8. You know, some higher ceiling, you know, outfielders, you know, like high school outfielders like Austin Beck and Joe Adell, but I'm really hearing a lot of those college players with them.
Now, the Nationals are kind of in a situation that the Phillies were in around 2007, 2008, 2009, in which they traded a lot of their prospects to try to win now. Nationals, of course, one of the big trades they made in the offseason was for Adam Eaton. I thought it was a good trade. Of course, Adam Eaton now could be done for the year. And now they're lacking depth in a lot of spots that they had some young players coming up. So how do you see the Nationals looking to draft? And do you think they can replenish the farm system a little bit quicker and a little bit better naturally, better than than the Phillies had to do, where they had to trade players and get a whole lot of prospects back.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually easier when you're making trades because it's another avenue for adding players. The Nationals obviously aren't going to do that because I think they're going to contend, or I think they're better than they've played so far this year too.
Mm-hmm.
With the Nationals, it's a little tougher figuring out who they're going to pick at 25. I mean, you hear a lot of college names with them. A lot of the college pitchers, I guess, is what I'm hearing at 25. Although, really, when you're picking that low, you never know who's going to fall in your lap. But I hear college guys like Alex Lang from LSU, Tanner Houck from Missouri, Clark Schmidt from South Carolina is a guy who had Tommy John surgery. And they obviously haven't been afraid of that in the past with guys like Lucas Giolito and Eric Fetty in the first round. So, it'll be interesting to see with the Nationals which way they go. But I would love to be able to predict the first 25 picks. I know what's going to happen. I know I'm not that good. But my best bet would be college pitcher because that seems what I'm hearing the most with them.
Yeah. Our special guest this segment, Jim Callis, senior writer for MLBPipeline.com and MLB.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Jim Callis, MLB. I think a lot of the other teams in our coverage area are kind of in the same boat. The Mets, Yankees, Red Sox, White Sox, and Cubs are all picking kind of further down the line. But have you heard any stories or any particular direction any of those teams might be looking to go in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees, I mean, I'll just throw out names. I mean, I'm not going to be so arrogant as to think I've got all the picks plotted out exactly, but for the Yankees, I mean, if it kind of pans out like I think, unless somebody falls to them, I think they'd be looking at probably, Trevor Rogers, who's a high school left-hander from New Mexico, Nick Prado, a really sweet swinging first baseman, high school kid from California. I've also heard, I mentioned, I think, Griffin Canning before. He's that UCLA right-hander. If he fell, I could see all those guys, being in New York's mix. For the Mets, some of the same, I hear college players, they might wind up with Prado. That's kind of my best guess at this point. I've also heard them on some of the college pitchers that I mentioned with the Nationals. Also heard them on, there's a junior college pitcher from Florida named Nate Pearson, who's thrown 100, 101, 102 in a bullpen workout about a week ago. And I've heard him with the Mets, so that's a possibility with them. If they went with a college position player, it might be Logan Warmoth, who's a shortstop from North Carolina. Let's see, Red Sox. You kind of look at those same college names we've talked about. They might have a chance. I don't know if he quite gets this far, but there's an interesting player named Keston Hiura. From UC Irvine, he's leading NCAA Division I in hitting and on-base percentage. Some guys think he's the best pure hitter in this draft, but he also probably needs Tommy John surgery, and there's some question. You'd like to maybe think he could play second, but you haven't seen him there because of the elbow injury. He's a guy who I hear with Boston some. The Cubs have two picks at 27 and 30. I think they're in the mix for a lot of these college pitchers that I've mentioned. They like for some of those guys to fall them. And also, name I hear with them, the Red Sox, too, there's a 5'8" shortstop from high school kid from California named Nick Allen, who's probably the best defensive player in the draft. And even though he's a little guy, I'm not saying he's Dustin Pedroia. He hasn't that kind of bat, but he can hit. He hits the ball with some authority. And so it's a pretty good package, and I've heard his name with the Cubs some.
You hear that phrase a lot, Tommy John surgery, and it's kind of gone through cycles in which now it's a regular occurrence, and there's stories that, especially pitchers, they'll feel stronger after Tommy John surgery. But then there's also issues, it's come up with a couple teams in which a player or a pitcher has to have a second Tommy John surgery. Do you notice it seems to be not only more prevalent, but are we going the other way? We're having too many of the surgeries, or do you see the injuries kind of affecting how teams look at who to draft?
Yeah, like I said, with the Nationals, they haven't been afraid of taking Tommy John guys in the past, and it's a little different with the position players with Keston Hiura. But, I'd say one, I think we're definitely seeing more of them. I just think we're seeing guys throw harder than ever, and I'm coming to the conclusion, I'm not claiming to be, a doctor or anything, but that I just don't think the human arm is built to throw over 95 miles an hour regularly, and a lot of these guys who throw very hard blow out or blow out even more than once. I do think teams kind of take that as, kind of par for the course with pitchers, and a lot of these guys do come back as good or better than ever, but then there's also some cautionary tales. I mean, Brady Aiken, who was the number one overall pick in the draft in 2014 with the Astros and didn't sign when he failed his physical, but still went in the first round the next year to the Indians after he'd had Tommy John surgery, his stuff hasn't come back. So while the assumption is that most of these guys will be back, like I said, as good or better than ever, it doesn't happen every time, and you kind of have to, it's tough. I mean, I think basically if you're taking, you can't not draft pitchers because it's even more expensive to try to trade for them or sign them as free agents. But as you're developing pitchers, you're gonna have guys get hurt. Unfortunately, baseball's never figured out an answer to that.
Yeah. Jim, before we let you go, another thing that you and your colleagues do a great job of is keeping people involved in the fantasy aspect of baseball. And you have some regular contributions and regular advice for people looking to find the next big prospect and how soon prospects are to coming up. One player in particular, Rhys Hoskins, again with the Phillies, I know you've written about him quite a bit. He's tearing the cover off the ball for the second straight year. Right now he's blocked by Tommy Joseph, who's been one of the few productive offensive players for the Philadelphia Phillies. Both of those players play first base. And a lot of the beat writers really like Hoskins and says he has a really high baseball IQ. Your thoughts on him and how the Phillies can try to work him into the mix and any other prospects that you think are really close to making an impact at the major league level?
Yeah, with Rhys, I mean, he's a guy as a fifth-round pick, that's had to kind of prove himself at every level, and he's done that. He had a huge year in Double-A last year. Redding is a very good hitter's park, but he's gone to Lehigh Valley, Triple-A this year, and continued to hit, continued to manage the strike zone very well. The tough thing with him and Tommy Joseph is there's really no other position you could put these guys at. Mm-hmm. You're not in the American League, so there's no DH, and I don't think either one of these guys runs well enough to run them around the outfield. So, Hoskins is not going to have a place to play until, something like unless Tommy Joseph goes somewhere, they trade him or whatever. I'm not saying these guys are as good, but it's kind of like when the Phillies had Jim Thome and Ryan Howard. Ryan Howard and Jim Thome each had one position they could play, and there wasn't, there was no other option. From a fantasy standpoint, I mean, I think, the probably the guy who makes the biggest impact, who's not currently up in the big leagues, but will be up, fairly soon, I would think, would be Yoan Moncada of the White Sox. He was the centerpiece of the Chris Sale trade. He's a power speed guy, and he's hitting well in AAA, and, strikes out a little bit too much, but, I think if he played the second half of the season, you might see the guy hit 10 homers and steal 15 or 20 bases.
Yep. Well, Jim, thanks so much for all your insights. Again, we invite people to check out your work, MLBpipeline.com, MLB.com. And I know you got to be excited for the MLB draft coming up on June 12th.
Yeah, no, I am. It's like the biggest day of the year. I'm working on a mock draft right now, and I'll have two more between Friday and the draft. Monday night, so kind of consuming me 24/7 these days.
Yeah, you got to be for all the insights you have there. Thanks so much for your time and best of luck with your next two mock drafts coming up.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, our pleasure. Jim Kyle, senior writer for MLB Pipeline and MLB.com with some valuable insights on this year's Major League Draft. We're going to take a break coming up in just a moment. Keith Groller will join me and will be joined by CBS Radio's John Johnson to talk about the NBA draft that will be coming up soon, along with some more thoughts on the Phillies. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call, along with Keith Groller. I'm Chris Michael, and we're very pleased to be joined this segment by John Johnson, the outstanding reporter, talk show host, and update anchor on Sports Radio WIP and KYW News Radio 1060. John, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to Sports Talk.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We want to pick your brain about a lot of different issues, but we'll start with the NBA draft. We're nearing that big day. And I know listening to your station, a lot of people initially after the draft lottery were a little upset that the Sixers didn't get two picks, like a 1 and a 4 or a 2 and a 5, and didn't get that extra pick in the top 10. But with all the rookies, I actually think they made up pretty good still getting a top 3 pick, and then you'll have that extra pick going forward for next year. But generally, what are your thoughts about this year's draft and about where the Sixers are selecting at the number 3 position?
Boy, and I agree with you in the fact that they only have the 1 pick versus multiple, especially with having such a young team and needing, especially last year with your 2 key pieces and Embiid and Simmons not being able to even share the court together to figure out what you have before you fill in the missing holes. But in terms of this draft, it's boy, this is such a tricky draft. In my opinion, Markelle Fultz, the freshman out of Washington, mm-hmm. is your clear-cut number one. You hear mixed reviews. You think Boston might take him. You think he might not. In my opinion, he would fit the Sixers absolutely perfectly. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but I suppose it's worth a phone call. In speaking with president of basketball operations slash general manager Brian Colangelo, he, to quote him, he said, "We're leaving all options open." He's open to possibly trading up, to possibly trading down for value to get multiple picks, to maybe even trading the pick altogether, which I don't believe, but again, when you say leaving all options open, I guess you'll say that. If they stay at three, if you're going to go best player available, Josh Jackson, the freshman out of Kansas, is who I would take. I believe he would be the best player there at three, assuming that Fultz goes first and Lonzo Ball out of UCLA goes second. If you can trade up, again, Markelle Fultz is my guy. If you're going to trade down, I know the hot name has always been Malik Monk, the freshman out of Kentucky who is a perimeter shooter, and this is one thing the Sixers have needed the last 4 years. It has been a shooter. So he fits that void. And then, you know, you talk about if you're able to get two picks in the top ten, then you'll have to see where the draft falls and how you can manipulate it from there.
John, can you just talk about this team? And it's been a waiting process. You know, we're waiting for Simmons to get on the floor. We're waiting for all these pieces to come together. The draft, how important is this draft, though, to maybe add that additional piece as we're talking about?
Oh, it's hugely important. It's unfortunate how last year transpired, how Ben Simmons had just fell awkwardly on his foot and broke that fifth metatarsal and ultimately missed the whole season to Joel Embiid and the meniscus tear. And Embiid is a huge question mark since he began playing organized basketball, because as talented as he is, he could be a generational player. For what he accomplished in 31 games as a rookie was unprecedented, in my opinion. And when you can only compare his stats to Will Chamberlain, that tells you a whole lot. But having said all that, he only played 31 games. He and Ben Simmons never shared the court together. As much as we talked about Ben Simmons and saying, oh, he's so great, he could be this, could be that, well, we haven't seen him on the floor yet to even get a proper assessment, a real assessment outside of hopes and dreams. Then we come to this draft here and we say, all right, if we're going to have all these young players, we get all these guys we can fit positionally, we know what we're going to do moving forward. Having been around this team since the start of the rebuild, since the start of the tearing it down, I suppose, 4 years ago, and then slowly building it back up, we still truly don't know what we have, because we've yet to see these key pieces who you, quote, tanked for, share that floor together. And then to know who the missing pieces are in between, which is what brings up the whole free agency, who could be a good fit, who could not. I mean, it's a crapshoot right now.
John, in your role on WIP and just being around the city, out at the events, maybe you could speak to how hungry the fan base is for a successful basketball team. I thought when they had that little winning streak, when Embiid was playing lights out and they won a couple games in a row, they beat, I think, the Knicks. A big come-from-behind win at the buzzer. I thought we saw the seeds of a rebirth of the franchise in terms of interest, in terms of passion, in terms of excitement. I mean, the Phillies, we know that the Phillies stink. The Flyers just can't seem to get it together. The Eagles are always going to be there as the number one sports team in that town. But I think there's a lot of people who would love to see a competitive, exciting basketball team come together and make a run at the playoffs. What are your thoughts being in that city and being around the people?
No, you're absolutely right in terms of just being starved for just a playoff appearance or a playoff win. When you look at the four major organizations, four major sports, in Philadelphia, you're right. The Eagles, the NFL, always seems to be number one, although the Phillies trumped them for a period of time during that great run they had. But polling just listeners of, say, WIP and just conversations I have on the radio, I get more feedback, believe it or not, with Sixers than any other sport. And because you know, it's a superstars league. So you get one, and then if you're lucky enough to get two, I mean, that changes the fate of your entire franchise, where, you know, versus other sports where you need a lot of pieces put together. So, I mean, the hype around the Sixers, despite witnessing what we've seen in the win column all this time, and to go back to what you said, looking back at last year, everybody will point to that 10-win January and what they were able to accomplish with just a healthy Embiid and Dario Saric and the key pieces around them. We didn't even get to see Ben Simmons or what we'll see moving forward. So, believe it, there is so much hype around the 76ers right now. I know the Eagles are going to come first, but the Sixers are a very close second.
John, I wanted to throw a couple of those different scenarios out at you as far as the draft. And the one I thought was most interesting was you really like Fultz, which I know people who watch us in the Washington, D.C. area, they would love for Fultz to come to Philadelphia. It would be a lot closer to his hometown down in the DMV. What would it take for the Sixers to have to trade up to get Fultz, or is there any possible way he would fall down to number three?
You know, Danny Ainge, who's in charge of all things draft and general managing up in Boston, I can't imagine that he would just pass on someone like Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
However, you'd be foolish. You wouldn't be doing your homework not to listen to offers. And in the past, he will get what he wants if he's going to make a transaction. What would it take? Boy, I mean, the Sixers have a ton of assets in terms of a lot of future draft picks from other organizations that they can use as trade chips. It's a question of you'd have to be pretty certain Markelle Fultz is your answer if you're going to trade upwards of at least two first-round picks and then, you know, finagling something else or negotiating something else after that for the potential of making that happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, if things fall as you said, Fultz goes number one, Ball goes number two. You mentioned Jackson. Tatum is also available. De'Aaron Fox is a name that a lot of people really like. Could be a game changer. Although if Ben Simmons, and I heard Brian Colangelo say on your station a couple weeks ago, they really view Ben Simmons as the point forward. So does that take De'Aaron Fox out of the mix, or was Colangelo just posturing and they might still go after a guy like Fox at the point?
Yeah, this is where it gets so interesting, because you just quoted Brian Colangelo, more or less said what he said. When you talk to head coach Brett Brown, he says, no. Ben Simmons is our point guard, and I mean it in every sense of the word. He's going to take the ball up the court every possession. He's going to be the one that is the floor general. And if they are going to play that to a T, then that brings in all the questions of De'Aaron Fox, who I think is a really good prospect and potentially a great player, to even possibly Lonzo Ball, who I don't know how much I believe the rumors that are circulating around Los Angeles that's saying that they're soured on him right now, because he's a tremendous talent despite the question marks surrounding who runs his camp and his father. That's where the big question mark is, because if Ben Simmons, if they're going to experiment this, and you have to be pretty certain you're going to stick with this, then that takes other players out of the equation if you decide to draft for fit versus best player available.
Two other names that could be in the mix if they stay at three. Lonzo Ball, you mentioned him, and you mentioned his father, LeVar, who's been stirring things up all offseason long. If he would be available, would you make a play at him, knowing that you get that extra baggage and potentially some disruption from his dad, LeVar?
Yeah, it's, you know, in sports talk radio especially, from the getting a lot of calls from fans who are concerned about Philadelphia sports has had its history with questionable parents being involved, Eric Lindros to most recent, I can go to like K.J. McDaniel and his brief stint with the Sixers, and 100 players in between. In all honesty, in my opinion, I don't think his father will be as much a pain as he's being led on to be. Again, he's out in the West Coast. He has two younger children who he's trying to hype up as well moving forward. So although he may have throw in his two cents from time to time, that's not really I don't think that's going to be an issue. The question mark is Lonzo Ball, the point guard. Now, he's tremendously talented, and his shot scares me. I'm worried how it will translate at the NBA level. Off the catch and shoot, if he's just an open shot from the perimeter, I have complete faith in him. Mm-hmm. If he's has coverage on him, if it's off the dribble, man-to-man, I worry about it. And then again, it goes back to what Ben Simmons will be. And I don't think if he's your point guard, he and Lonzo Ball will mesh well together. But if you have that thought, well, we'll try Ben Simmons, and if he doesn't work, well, at least we have Lonzo Ball. He would be our true point guard. So it's a lot to consider if he falls to three.
Mm-hmm. John, just your take as a sports commentator on the NBA. Again, right now, as we're talking to you, it's a one-sided series. These two teams have dominated the league. We knew it was going to be a Cavaliers-Warriors final. A lot of people kind of expected the Warriors to win this thing. Just your take on the state of the NBA. To me, it's not there. I mean, it's just not there. It seems like it's the same two teams. At least the NFL, there's hope. You know, you get a team like the Falcons coming from the depths. to the Super Bowl. We've seen it in baseball with the Kansas City Royals coming from basically nowhere to make it the back-to-back World Series. We're not seeing that kind of rise in the NBA. And this right now, that championship series is not helping them. Just your take as a sports commentator.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there's so many different aspects. I mean, first of all, the NBA is a superstar league, which we know. And if you have one, two, and if you have what Golden State has in multiple, I mean, it's so hard to compete. Then you have their collective bargaining agreement. When you compare that to the other sports, like the NFL, where it's a very weak players' union, where contracts are never guaranteed, just the money, certain parts of aspects of the monetary value is guaranteed, where you can flip a team who's 3-13 and suddenly be 10-6 or 11-5 the next year. The NBA, contracts are guaranteed. And when you have max contracts, which makes it even more difficult for other teams, this is where you enter the word in tanking, which is what the Sixers decided to do 4 years ago when they looked at the landscape of the NBA, which hasn't changed. It's exactly the same way it was 4 years ago, where you know how it's going to end before it begins in terms of your most likely finals matchup, where you need the superstars. And it's either you make that attempt to acquire a superstar via free agency and throw out a massive money at them, but another team can easily match. And then it's just up to the superstar to decide where he wants to go. And in some cases, they'll take a little bit less to be with another superstar because they know it'll increase their likelihood of winning, which as we saw with Kevin Durant, now with Golden State, where if you can't beat him, join him. And you can either make an attempt to acquire a free agent or you stink, cross your fingers for the lottery, and hope you get that number one pick, which is what the Sixers did for four long years. But they have what they believe to be and what we hope to be in generational talent in Joel Embiid, cross your fingers if he's healthy, and Ben Simmons, and maybe whoever they might acquire come the 22nd of this month. I mean, it's a very lopsided league. There are many things that need to change and attempt to correct all of this, but to this point, it is what it is, and we've known it all along. But one good note, the Golden State Warriors, who a lot of people dislike because, again, you know how it's going to end before it begins and the amount of superstars they have, they did something very similar to what the 76ers did and stunk for 3-4 years. It was at least 3 years off the top of my head where they were able to draft Steph Curry and get very lucky with a Draymond Green, and then you get your Klay Thompsons, and then when you have those pieces, and then that attracts other free agents, superstars, to want to play with you. So in a sense, as disappointing as it is, a 76ers fan will look at that and say, you know, boy, I hope I'm that team in three more years. I don't care about the rest of the league.
Our special guest this segment, John Johnson, outstanding reporter, talk show host, and update anchor on KYW News Radio and Sports Radio, WIP. The Colangelos both have been on the radio and different outlets talking about trying to acquire a veteran presence. Have you gotten a sense of which type of player or any actual names that the Sixers might try to go after? I know J.J. Redick would be a great fit. I think he's a unrestricted free agent, a great character guy, not a superstar, but certainly a guy that would help the process along. And then you have some other guys like Otto Porter out of Washington, who is a restricted free agent. I know the fans in Washington would really love to keep him. Gallinari out of Denver, he would be a nice stretch for. What direction, if the Sixers go in the free agent market or even through trade, what type of veteran do you think they might try to target?
You know, before we knew the results of the draft lottery, everybody was talking about Kyle Lowry. Oh, he's from Philadelphia. He's going to command a lot of money, but it'd be great to bring him home. He'd be a great veteran presence and a great shooter, even though you'd have to pay a lot to bring him here potentially. And then the draft lottery fell, and you knew where you stood. And because you're falling at 3 versus 1, or 1 and 4, whatever the multiple picks may be, and you just know you have that one pick, the chatter has sparked again. Well, we got to get a free agent shooter because I can't put all my faith in a rookie. And outside of one or two players, or maybe even three players in the top 10, everybody has a broken shot or needs their shot worked on at the NBA level. And as you mentioned, the Otto Porter Juniors, the Patty Mills, the J.J. Redicks. Mm-hmm. In talking to Brian Colangelo last week, he's not showing his hand by any means, and he's very good at saying a whole lot and giving you absolutely nothing. But in speaking to people around the league, the Sixers are making phone calls to different players, agencies, mm-hmm. just to kind of get a feel about how they feel about the 76ers and what they're seeking in the free agent market. At this point in time, I don't think I can pinpoint a single name because it's still kind of early, and frankly, they don't know to this point. At least they're not giving us any clue what they're going to do come draft night. So I think they will acquire one of the names we mentioned. It's just a question of who.
Mm-hmm. You know, one other name I wanted to ask you about as far as this year's draft, Malik Monk, who you mentioned earlier, could be the best shooter overall in this year's draft. But I haven't seen him ranked any higher than sixth in any of the mock drafts out there. Any chance the Sixers would take him at three or maybe try to trade back and get him? Because everyone's saying, well, he might be – the Sixers need a really good outside shooter. He's the best outside shooter in the draft, but it would be a reach to take him at three. So where do you see any of the chance of that Monk ends up in Philadelphia?
Ever since about midway through the college basketball season on Sports Talk Radio, it's been Malik Monk, Malik Monk, Malik Monk. And we have to get him to Philadelphia. We've always need that perimeter shooter. I like Monk. There is no way I would take him at three. You would only be hurting yourself. Sure, you could make the comment, oh, well, that's what you need. Just get it. Who cares if it's a three? If you're the general manager of a basketball team, you're ruining the value. You can look around at the teams that fall after you, see what their interest is in a prospect who could go at number three if you are dead set on getting Malik Monk, and trade down for value and get an extra pick, whether it be in the first round or future years. And I know Sixers fans don't want to hear that term, you know, asset for a future year or future draft pick. But that's the nature of the business. You'd be foolish to do it at three. I like Malik Monk. If they were to trade down, I know there's a lot of speculation. I don't think there's any real traction to it. The Sacramento Kings have been, I think it's the 5th and the 10th overall pick, about, you know, potentially, let's see if they're interested in trading up to three, and we could get their 5th overall and their 10th overall, and then we could get a player like Malik Monk, and then maybe a Dennis Smith Jr., just see how that goes. I like Monk, but not at three. Mm-hmm.
John, I want to just go back to your job. I mean, you're in Philadelphia there. Are you a Philadelphia guy? And is this like your dream come true to just be talking Philadelphia sports, whether it's the Sixers, Eagles, Phillies, Flyers, or whatever?
Yeah. I don't work for a living. The hours are interesting when you cover games in, you know, I cover the Sixers and the Phillies. So the hours are interesting, and you're doing like second shift and well past midnight many times. But it beats a real job. It is a dream job for me. To be able to work where I grew up and covering the teams that I love. Sure, when you're in the business, it changes your mindset because you find out a lot more about people. Because athletes, and especially athletes, in most cases, they're put on this huge pedestal, almost godlike. And when you're behind the scenes, you learn, well, you know, some guys are truly the nicest individuals you'll ever meet, and some really aren't nice people. And you find out they're people just like you and me, but you learn so much more about it. The only issue I ever have is when the fan and the reporter get confused with one another or they become intertwined where I can't separate myself. That becomes a problem, and I find myself doing that a lot, especially over the last, say, 2 years with the Sixers.
Mm-hmm. And you said you grew up rooting for these teams, and you've seen some good times, you've seen some bad times. Right now, we're kind of in limbo. We're in the process, if you will, of waiting for our teams to and Philadelphia to get back to that upper echelon. I don't know who's the closest at this point. Every time we have one of the Philly guys on, I say, which is the next team that's going to have a parade? I'm not sure where I would go with that answer right now.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Well, the only team I would say without question still has much longer to go would be the Phillies, because as much as the fans, you know, like to talk about the Bryce Harper sweepstakes and the Manny Machado sweepstakes and maybe even the Mike Trout sweepstakes, when I look at that team right now, you could add one of those players. Sure, they'd be marginally better, but it wouldn't make the ultimate difference to make them a postseason team. They have so many holes and so many prospects to figure out, so many young players at the major league talent that they need to find out what they truly are before moving forward. So they have much longer to go. The Flyers took a step back last year. And something needs to change to shake things up. And Ron Hextall, the general manager, likes to keep prospects down in the minors until he believes they are truly ready, which fans are getting fed up with. We'll see what happens with them. The Eagles and general manager Howie Roseman are making an attempt this year to be competitive while rebuilding. It leaves a lot of question marks. Fans are setting a double-digit win expectation for this year. They have what they believe is their future quarterback in Carson Wentz, and I truly believe they are correct. I think he's immensely talented, and he's a really great guy and very level-headed, which is great for a quarterback, which is as much cerebral as it is physical. And the only question mark you'll have with the Eagles is the one-year contracts and setting yourself up for, you know, cornering yourself with potential free agents and having to pay that max dollar in the wide receiver, one in particular that they brought in and a couple more that they're trying out. The Sixers are the one franchise where, barring health, which is a huge question mark, but again, barring health, you know what you have in Joel Embiid. And you saw the difference that he could make in a single month of basketball and how he can turn an organization from, at one point, a 10-win organization to, they won 28 games last year, to potentially, realistically, barring health, they could be a 500 team in the fall, or come 2017-18 season, and maybe compete for an 8 seed and take that next step. And then you become more attractive around the NBA. You have that brand-new facility on the Camden waterfront, state-of-the-art, biggest in the NBA. I mean, you could live there. I mean, they have absolutely everything a player could want to that young talent, to a ton of money to spend, to a ton of assets, future draft picks that become even more attractive because they can continue to build while competing. So as tough as it is right now to be a Philadelphia sports fan, the team that is closest to potentially being a true contender for a title would be the Sixers.
John, before we let you go, you mentioned the Phillies. Obviously, when the Phillies were winning games in April, people were starting to get excited. They're going to have a winning season. Maybe they get an outside shot at the second wild card spot. And I was trying to bring people back down to earth, and then May came, and you know everything crashed, and the Phillies have actually fallen below expectations now over the last couple weeks before winning a few games of late. What have been the biggest upsides of the prospects? Which prospects have impressed you the most, and which of the prospects that have really not played well have been the most disappointing to you so far?
Yeah, it's, you know, in today's day and age, when we live in the age of social media, where everything is instant gratification, and if you have to wait more than 5 seconds, you become irritated. Baseball is a game of patience. Mm-hmm. It is everything. It is the exact opposite of what we live in today's social media age. So you have to be patient with baseball. When you have 162 games at 3, 3.5, 4-hour, 9-inning games, yeah, it's all about patience, which we have run short of. We're like infants again. Looking at what this roster has, and they went on that stretch where they had a 6-win May, and they lost 26 of 32, and it was very upsetting. And you got to the point where you're just emotionless. I was sitting at the ballpark. I just had nothing. I could stare off into space for countless innings because there's nothing going on, and everybody had been, you know, in a slump at the same time, so to speak. Looking at the talent that's on the roster right now, the one player who has been disappointing, without question, has been Michael Franco. Mm-hmm. And where he looks absolutely lost at the plate, where when you watch him at times, he will have a literal blind swing where he'll close his eyes and hope for the best. And his stance can be wrong. His lower body shifts the wrong way at times. He is completely lost at the plate, and he's yet to get out of that this season, which has been the most disappointing, because we always thought, well, we don't know what we have elsewhere, but we know Michael Franco is a cornerstone of this franchise for the next 5 to 10 years. Right now, we don't know that. And this has been going on since the second half of last year, so it's been an extended amount of time. Speaking to him, it's not a question of motivation. Mm-hmm. It's not a question of, well, there's nobody behind me, so I'll get him next time. It's not that with him at all. He's just completely lost. So there are several options you can take with him. I don't know what General Manager Matt Klentak's going to do. I was always okay with sending him down for a week or two to maybe just clear his head and hit the reset button, let him work on some things, let him come back up and go from there. Odubel Herrera had been infuriating at the plate. because he's a very unique character, very lively, outgoing guy. Mm-hmm. But you always wonder, how seriously does he take this? Because now he has a five-year contract where he's making considerable money. And he's kind of not worried about on a team that doesn't really have any postseason aspirations in terms of 2017. But I think he heard the chatter. I think he finally heard the chatter is what I should say. And people talking about him and saying, well, we would send him down to the minors. He doesn't get it. He doesn't care. Everybody's concentrated on bat flips. And something finally clicked in his head. And the last several games, he has been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how it continues. Baseball's ups and downs, and we'll see if he levels out. In terms of who I've been very surprised at, Ben Lively had a great debut. Again, mm-hmm. It's only one start. There's more film. He hasn't seen a team for the second time. This is what's so tough as a Phillies fan. We thought we would have a clearer picture by now of guys we thought for certain, well, we knew this guy's going to be here, that guy's going to be here. Those guys, well, we can look in the free agent market, or we'll see what's down in the minors, because the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs and the Reading Fightins have tremendous prospects in the organization that we hope translate at the Major League Baseball level. Mm-hmm. I guess Aaron Altherr would be the other player that I've been very happy with. Playing in the outfield, can hit with power. He's young, so have a lot of ups, a lot of downs. But outside of Aaron Altherr, and right now, the Phillies, although we have a lot of season left, it's just one question mark after another.
All right, John, thanks so much for your time. Continued success covering both the Sixers and the Phillies and all the sports for WIP and for KYW News Radio. We appreciate your time tonight.
Great job, John. Great job.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, we'll be back with more sports talk in just a moment. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our thanks to Jim Callis from MLB.com for joining us segment number one. Keith Groller recorded a segment with me earlier, and CBS Radio's John Johnson talking about the NBA draft. Keith, of course, on assignment covering some state softball playoff action that's going on right now. We're back to live coverage, and we have two very special guests from here in the Lehigh Valley. We bring in Dan Wakely and Chad Wakely. They're here to tell lots of stories, but they're also here to talk about the Howard Deppe Memorial All-Star event, which took place this last weekend. Chad and Dan, thanks for coming in, and nice to have you both on the show together this
time
around.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Appreciate it. Good to see you again.
And we kind of put this up the last minute. Dan called me this morning and said you were coming in, which we really appreciate, along with Chad. And I wanted to, we were talking about how old we've gotten. And I've never told this story before, but I remember the first sign that I was getting old was when you were coaching at Parkland and you introduced me to Chad, and he was about 9. It was around 1990, 91, and he was like this tall.
Oh, you're giving my age away. I try to keep that private.
Yeah, and now you're quite a bit older. Actually, he came up to me a few years later at Ballyhale Stadium, this young hulking man wearing the catcher's gear, coming up to me and saying, "Hi, Mr. Michael." I was like, "Who are you?" He goes, "I'm Chad Wakely, Dan's boy." Said, "You're this big. What are you doing wearing, you know, this tall, strapping man here?" So thanks for making me look old and bringing up some old memories. So before we talk about the Howard Deppe tournament, both of you are still very involved in local sports, and I didn't know that you were both coaching at Northwestern High School this past year. So could you tell us a little bit about all the different things you guys have been up to lately?
Well, you know, you can go first.
Go ahead.
Well, most important thing with coaching up at Northwestern High School this year is the fact that we got to do it together. Mm-hmm. From a championship standpoint, we did come up a little bit short.
Got to the finals, though.
We did get to the league finals and to the district semifinals. And, you know, but the opportunity to coach with my dad, that was enough for me to, you know, get back to actually coaching on the field versus just doing private lessons.
Yeah. And, Dad, you add a lot to the game. I know you were a manager, you know, you're pro pitcher, you were a pitching coach, and a lot of people spoke highly about your baseball intellect and what you can teach young people. So that's got to be an added a great benefit to the people at Northwestern.
No, I never heard that before about my baseball intellect.
I've been telling
I'll
you
take
for 20
it from
years.
You. Yeah. So, well, I didn't realize I was going to be back into coaching again after 11 years when I retired from teaching and coaching baseball. But longtime friend of mine, Bob Fatzinger, he was my catcher when we were both in Biddy League back in the 50s.
Back in the day.
And he had coached up there a few years as an assistant with Lenny Smith when his oldest son was a player, and Bob and I also have played men's senior league baseball, and so we're in the 60 plus division, talking about years that have gone by. We're eligible for 65 plus, but nevertheless, he said. We were talking after the tournament out in Phoenix this year, and he said, hey, I'm thinking about taking the baseball job at Northwestern. He said, are you interested in coming aboard and coaching with me? And no, I don't know, Bob. So we were going back and forth. He called me a couple of times, and then he approached Chad to get involved. And Chad and I were talking, and I thought that would be a treat, both to be coaching with Bob, but also my son. I knew Chad has been a student of the game too in his lifetime, sure, and he's very good at what he instructs. And Bob has a big background too of coaching and being involved with baseball. So I came aboard, and so I was back in it again, and Chad said, Dad, you're in your niche. I thought, well, I guess it must look at least good to him what we're doing. So, but it was back to the January workouts we didn't have much snow this year on a Sunday night, and then getting out onto the field when you can get out, but it was moderately a warm spring, etc. And when you're new, and we were the third group of coaches in the last 3 years there, so that was difficult for the youngsters, now to have a brand new group coming in. So it took a little bit to get things going. It's probably a project in the works, look to next year, because there are some people coming back this year, a lot of younger kids classes, as it often is in the smaller schools. You don't have the numbers, nor people to back up or to push the guys that are playing. Yeah. So there's some complacency too. But we got there, and like I said, it was a 1-0 loss in the league final. So that was the furthest they've gone in a few years to that level, I think, in recent years or many years. Yeah. So it was a typical long, short season. Baseball always is. I mean, once you get out and play, boy, it just keeps going and going, and the dust settles, and you have a champion. And now we have a couple teams from the East Penn Conference in the state finals,
and Liberty has won,
and Wilson in the Colonial League.
Yep.
So they're getting better. As long as we go further into the states, we're getting better in the area. So
yeah, we just got an update. Liberty baseball did win, so hopefully we'll get some scores from Wilson, and Liberty softball, and Whitehall's playing later this evening too. I guess
great
they start
team.
Around 6:30. So
good team, good organization. Bethlehem baseball for years.
And it was always fun watching Chad, watching him grow up, because he was one of those fundamentally sound players. I imagine you got a little instruction from your dad growing up about how to play the game the right way.
Well, anytime I'm coaching, whether it's on the field, or in a private session, or in someone's garage or basement, I'm a big believer, and it's not where you're coaching, it's how you're coaching. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky, to be born to my dad and get to see my big brother, and always being around the game and being the student of the game. And what is very close to my heart when I'm coaching, he's with me. And just like Coach, the late great Gene Yanni, who was my catching and hitting instructor. Yeah. Every time I'm coaching, those two guys are with me. And then when my attitude starts getting coming out, Coach Shy from Central Catholic's with me as well, because we're very blunt and to the point. So, the opportunities that he provided, the hours he sacrificed, and my mother, I'm very glad to be able to give back to baseball communities, and especially what I went to school for. I have 6 years of exercise science, and now running my own business, CW Fitness. And being able to teach proper speed, agility, and strength training for not just baseball but other respective sports helps me give back that extra bit that kept me from signing or going farther in my baseball career.
Yeah. Could you talk a little about that? Because that's huge now. And I know you're so active in the community, and a lot of parents, they talk about, well, how does my son or how does my daughter get to the next level? You are providing a big-time service here that a lot of colleges are now looking to see people participate in. I know Saquon Barkley was a great story locally. He went to different camps, and you look where he is right now. There's a lot of success stories out there because of the work that you and other people are doing. Could you talk specifically about what you do and how you interact with high school athletes now?
Sure. I design and implement sports performance training programs based on individual and team needs. I help design based on the energy systems of that sport and also the positions that are specific for that sport. So what we do is we look at an athlete, we look at, you know, are they a court athlete, are they a swimmer, baseball, basketball, soccer player, whatever. We analyze the movements based off scientific research, and we define functional training programs to help meet the needs of not just from a speed, strength perspective, but also flexibility and injury prevention, which is so crucial, especially on the fields that are around the Northeast and with weather conditions as well. After you analyze that, we have to do a lot of teaching. So my classroom is either the weight room, baseball field, what have you, to make sure that we're doing the best we can from a professional standpoint. What a lot of people don't understand is how much science goes into it. You don't just go to a gym and use machines, and it's like going to a doctor or a mechanic. You have to go to the right people to understand what to do and how to do it. So. On top of that, nutrition is very important. So all this stuff compiled together is what we call sports performance and exercise science. So someone, if you're not going to use me, you want to have someone that has an undergraduate or graduate degree in exercise science or related field and is nationally certified from the National Strength and Conditioning Association or the American College of Sports Medicine. Those are the two cream of the crops, in my opinion, and I've been in the field a little over 10 years now. So. And enjoying every minute of it.
All right, our special guests this segment, Dan Wakely and Chad Wakely. We're going to take a break and be back and talk about the Howard Deppe Memorial All-Star event. And it was truly an event this year. There was a lot more than just playing an All-Star game and a lot of great activities for the young people in the Eastern Pennsylvania region. One score we did get we want to pass along to you. Bangor defeated Upper Perk 8-4 to advance in state softball into the semifinal round for the first time ever in school history. Bangor's doing a lot of great things up there in the sports community. I think Keith actually picked Upper Perk to win, by the way. So, but we'll try to get some more scores before we wrap up our live show here. Don't forget, you can check out all the scores and game recaps tomorrow in the Morning Call or online at themorningcall.com. We'll be back with the final segment of Sports Talk in just a moment.
Or you can do both, maybe.
Welcome back to the final segment of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. We'll be off next week because of the McDonald's football game, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Our special guests once again this segment, Dan Wakely and Chad Wakely. And one of the things you're here to talk about is the Howard Deppe Memorial All-Star event. Some new wrinkles this year. We didn't have a show last week to preview it, but Chad, we'll start with you. Maybe you could recap some of the nuances of this year's event.
Well, as a person who has had lost some friends to cancer, and we have some cancer in the family, I want to try to help be a part of this baseball committee as much as possible to help continuing raise funds to hopefully one day, you know, find a cure to get rid of this horrible disease.
And the event, just so people know, benefits the American Cancer Society.
Yes, all proceeds collected go right to the Cancer Society. So I started volunteering on the day of about 3 or 4 years ago, throwing what we used to be the home run hitting contest, now it's a hitting contest. And I told my dad I'd like to get a little bit more involved and bring, you know, some of my, I don't like to say area expertise, because I feel you have to live a lifetime to be able to call yourself an expert, but we'll use area of expertise for this date and time. And I thought, how could I, you know, add something to it that might, you know, get younger people involved and bring more of an attraction to it. So after a bunch of meetings, a committee, what I decided to bring was the first annual high school college showcase and recruiting combine to American Cancer Society Howard Deppe All-Star event. And what we did was we sent out mailers, emails, et cetera, to local high school coaches for their best two or three underclassmen that are college prospects on and off the field, meaning in the classroom, community, et cetera.
That's great. Yeah.
And what we decided to do moving forward was we contacted 105 colleges from the New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland areas and invited them to come out for the showcase. So We tested the athletes before I go to this. We tested the athletes in baseball specific testing. Okay, a vertical jump, which measures lower body power, which is important for a lot of areas of baseball. Their 30-yard sprint versus a 60-yard sprint, because of all my life, I've never seen a player run 60 yards straight on a baseball field. So home the first, 30 yards. Yeah. We did a pro agility drill, which is change of direction, and a rotational medicine ball throw. So after all the kids went through and they completed that, we did different hitting stations, got their ball off bat velocity with a radar gun, showcased the outfielders from right field, infielders from third base, first baseman stayed in their spot, and then did some work with the catchers, and then we had the pitchers throw in the bullpen. So the kids got a full two-hour showcase that not only benefited the American Cancer Society, but got them used to what they're going to partake in at the collegiate and professional level, similar things that I went to and I went through, and other people that were, looking to move on with their careers. So, it was a donation to the Cancer Society, and after I got their testing numbers, with the help of a friend of
What's
mine,
this, sir?
This is a certificate every one of our athletes got, and because we were coming on your show, Chris, I thought I'd make you an honorary test.
Do you want to read those numbers? Because if I say it, no one will believe those.
So, well, they may or may not be real. You had a 40-inch vertical jump, which is that of a.
I was a catcher for one day.
You were a catcher for one day.
Bob Hartman told me to get away from him because he was a catcher on our bidding team.
You were a catcher for one day with a 40-inch vertical. That equivalents to a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL.
Oh, that's pretty accurate.
We have what I have you down here for, 3.1 home the first. That's Kenny Lofton.
3.1 hours?
3.1 seconds. That's Kenny Lofton or Deion Sanders in their prime. We had rotational medicine ball.
Dan, are you going to let this continue here? Your son's running amok here.
No, of 60 feet, which
is. You didn't
is
have anything
of,
to do with this, did you?
Mark McGuire, Bryce Harper power, and the change of direction, pro agility, 4.1. That's probably Adrian Peterson before his knee injury.
So you had
a heck of a testing day, if I must say.
You know, the reason your dad never had me as an announcer for his fall baseball programs was because I was nowhere near these numbers. He wouldn't even let me get near a playing field. But
the main reason, if I may just continue with this for a second.
About 30 seconds.
Okay, I established this was because college coaches want to see legit numbers, okay? And they want to see numbers by exercise professionals that are accredited. So this is a certificate of authenticity that I signed that each kid gets that this is good for 3 months.
So important for colleges, yeah.
Correct.
Dan and Chad, thanks so much for coming in, for
great
the great work you did.
Again.
Best of luck for next year's event.
Thank you.
Too.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. Our thanks to Dan and Chad Wakely joining us the second half of the program. And thanks to you for joining us again. We'll be off next week. We'll see you in 2 weeks with another live edition of Sports Talk. And as we close up shot, Liberty and Bangor baseball and softball have won. Wilson and Whitehall baseball are winning. So best of luck to all the remaining teams in the RCN viewing area in the state playoffs. And for everyone at RCN, I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.